Good news, I'm back. I don't listen to these, but you were saying that last week was probably not your best work solo. We've never done a solo episode before. I should explain, I've been moving and been insanely busy. And we had like the Soldier Hollow race.
Yeah, we missed an episode and I didn't want to miss two in a row. So I decided to just jump on and try and do a solo episode. And I didn't really prepare much. But I actually had one person say they liked it. So
for all both of you who returned, I actually prepared a thing today. I think it's actually, I put a huge amount of research into the thing I'm going to talk about today. I think it's interesting and important. Mine's a little bit of a bummer, but that's okay. That's just the kind of energy I bring to the function. We should explain, today is our like non-bike episode.
Yeah, we do this every year. We
qualifier, do, because we've missed a couple weeks. We are going to do some, just there's just a lot of,
yeah, well, our deep dives
our
will
deep
be,
dives are non-bike
or non-bike. Everything else will be just kind of like a normal podcast. And we do this once a year where we just we take an episode where our deep dives are not bike related.
And for those of you who are new, the intention behind it, and it's almost kind of a joke, is just that like you should take some amount of time off the bike at some point in your season. I really think most people don't have a problem with this. And I will say, Dan and I don't necessarily do this.
I think Joe and I are the only ones that have a problem with this.
I think most of us are busy, and especially for the adults, like you're busy enough that you get off the bike time and stuff in excess in your life. And it's always a struggle of trying to find more ways to create more time on the bike. For the kids though, like when you're in high school and you're smart and you can get through your schoolwork and stuff, like a lot of kids have the ability to kind of overdo it. And so we do recommend, especially for the kids who are like training all winter long, hitting the I-Cups, hitting nationals, hitting Nika, immediately into cross, then into hard winter training. Like it's good to have, you know, we've said like a week where you don't even think about the bike.
Yeah.
You know, it comes at different points to different people. We're not saying it has to be this week for you, depending on what your season looks like. And it's funny because, and not that those people really listen to this, but for a lot of people, like Nike is their whole season. And I'm like, you know, they don't pick up the bike till July anyway. Like they're fine. But I think for the audience of this podcast, they skew pretty heavily toward potentially needing a reminder to.
I think there's a few of them. There are a lot that they take a lot of family vacations and they'll go to Europe for 2 weeks and then they'll be back for a week and then they'll go on another 2 week vacation and
da, 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 yeah. Da, the skyline. Anyway.
Yeah. Those people are fine.
But
you know, if you have been grinding since like March and done all the I-Cups and you've done some national races and you're gearing up for Nika right now, and you haven't taken some time off, you need to, you know. And then always too, just kind of like, I think sometimes just July is kind of a drag because it's hotter. It always seems to be a little harder to find motivation in July.
It's a good time to take some
time. It's a good time to take a little bit of time off and just let your body heal, make some adaptations, relax. Don't take too long off though. It seems to like some people just get out of the habit of it, you know, if they take too long.
And like it should be kind of hard. Ideally, it's kind of hard for you to do this because you love it. And then by, you know, if you take Monday to Friday off, Friday night, you should be so excited for your ride the next day. Like we want you to feel invigorated and motivated. Like I have bad news. If you ever get to a point where you are having to push yourself to get out and ride, you're going to stop riding. So I don't know. Everyone has probably an individual approach they're going to take to this. I will always say I'm an advocate for you not being a professional cyclist. Like you should have other stuff going on in your life. Strategically, like if you kind of know, oh, well, I've got the family trip to Hawaii is going to be this week, like make that the week, right? Or for me, it was like a couple years ago when I got married, I'm like, you know, I'm going to have the kind of 2 weeks where I'm going to be getting married and then going on my honeymoon. I'm going to strategically kind of plan my season around that. So do whatever works for you. The principle is.
Yeah. And I had like a couple weeks ago, I just had a week where I just did not have time to ride my bike.
Yeah.
You know, I had Missoula, I had getting ready for Soho.
Yeah.
I just couldn't ride my bike. And I was really, really, I get grumpy when I don't ride my bike.
Yes.
And
we're going to touch on this in my thing.
Okay. And I was getting kind of itchy to ride. So hopefully, you know, you take your break, you feel better, you get a little itchy to ride, the love's back and you have a killer Nika season. That's what we're hoping for. So
I do want to say, and this can kind of maybe to touch off our news, the Soldier Hollow race, I don't know if you already talked about it last week
a little bit. Very briefly, I think I mostly just mentioned Ainsley's awesome performance.
I want to throw out, there were a lot of awesome performances. Yeah. And it was great for me. I have been less involved with the racing side in the past few years. Most of my involvement with the team has been coaching a team and doing the podcast. As I've started to get back into the racing, and then as I ran this race week, and I want to say first off to all of the people who were so helpful to me all the time, thank you so much. It was great. We had a really good time. It's a lot of work. I don't know how or why you do it. I'm not as nice a person as you are. I would never do that more than about once a year because it killed me. But it was really cool. And I want to say especially like we had that squad of girls who showed up and threw down. And that was cool to see. And I think everybody in a Maybird kit represented well. Lots of really classy riding. I was very proud. I was very proud. The one day where my Maybird shirt was dirty, I was really bummed because I was like, I want people to know that I'm on this team because I like being associated with you guys. So that was great.
And Joe, thanks. And I was just so grateful for you and Andrew for taking care of that race. Those races are exhausting. They're a lot of work to get ready for, to set up for, to tear down for, to put all the stuff away after. It's a lot of work.
I'm awesome. I know. So. Andrew was there too. I think there were people who were confused between Andrew. I had at least one person come up to me and they were like, talking about what we'd done on the kid's bike the day before. And I was like, I wasn't here the day before. Andrew was. And I'm kind of hurt that we like, oops, there are two of us, which is at least two too many. But yeah, Soho was awesome. Thank you guys for that. As a heads up, there's the Soldier Hollow iCup this weekend. So if you finished that race and you're like, hey, I need to get more Soldier Hollow in, there's the iCup too.
No, I hope people do this race just because, you know, especially if you haven't raced much yet this season.
Yeah.
I think people that listen to this podcast have already done a lot of racing, but I'm hoping we get a good turnout at Soho.
Soho's fun to race at because it's the only place where you go, or it's one, well, that's not true now with Nike, but it's like, it is a dedicated race course. You never go and just ride Soldier Hollow. In fact, they charge you to ride it when it's not racing, which is super duper weird. But it's like a dedicated race course. There's talk of a World Cup being there in the future. I was hearing some rumors about that. It was the first place I ever raced a bike. I have fond memories there. Heads up with pre-riding for the iCup. We probably should have cleared. This would have been good information to get, but there was some discussion in the team chat yesterday. Soldier Hollow does require you to pay to ride. If you wanted to pre-ride for the USAC thing, you needed a race plate technically. I don't know how much they enforce this.
I was going to say, I don't think they enforce it very strictly. We've done it in the past and paid for it. And
I don't know.
And no, it
my official answer is hit up iCup and Soho and be like, hey, what are the rules? But if you show up and just ride around and they stop you, just be like, oh, I'm sorry. Where do I pay? Kind of a thing. You know, that's probably my recommendation. I assume it's a liability thing, but
I don't know.
Who knows? Just as a heads up, I do want to throw out as a public service announcement, but you guys should come to that. It'll be fun. Okay. News other than that, before we jump to cycling world news, is there anything else as a team we should hit?
You know, we did a pre-ride for Point to Point yesterday. It was super fun.
Yes.
I did just half of it, and I'm like,
oh, I'm cooked.
I don't know how I'm going to pull that rabbit out of a hat when race day comes, but
it'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
We'll survive. I do want to throw out really quick. A theme at the race was several people having weird flats and their tubeless sealant having not been refreshed since the beginning of this season or maybe even the end of last season. This is a quick reminder. I'm going to say a third of the team has no sealant in their tires, and instead they have either one or multiple rubber balls rolling around in their tires, and if you roll over something, they're going to go flat. Tubeless sealant is not a forever thing, and for a lot of people, you're going to need to refresh your sealant at least once per tire in like the lifetime of a tire. Some of our riders, I think, are riding enough that their tires are wearing out before they need to. That was just a thing I noticed with three or four people. Mid-season bike checks are good. Make sure you have brake pads. Make sure you have tire sealant. Make sure your chain's not stretched. That's an expensive mistake that you make once and then never again. Maybe just kind of look over your bike. Doesn't even need to go to a shop. Your bike's, you know, I think most of your bikes are probably fine, but there's several people on the team who for sure have some relatively critical issues that they're just riding on every day that they should check. So I did want to plug that.
That's a good reminder. Thanks.
Tour de France, really fast.
Sure, yeah.
The Tour de France is happening. The Tour de France is the biggest bike race in the world. If you've never heard of it, then
next to Soldier Hollow iCup.
Next to the Soldier Hollow iCup, it is the biggest. It's going to be a question of whether someone can beat Tadej Pogačar for the yellow jersey. I kind of think Probably no, but I'd like Vingigo to push him. The only two other real potential competitors, Roglic and Evenepoel, both somehow managed to lose almost a minute on stage one, which is really, really not good. So it will be a Pogacar versus Vingigo showdown that Pogacar is heavily favored to win. At least the bookies think, which is maybe, you know, getting a little ahead of myself here for the rest of the episode. But Alpecin De Koninck has won the first two stages. Jasper Philipsen won the first stage. Mathieu van der Poel won the second. Tadej Pogacar has contested for the win in both stages so far, which is insane. I am going to go ahead and plant my flag and say that Tadej Pogacar is the greatest rider of all time. I think there is, like, he is clearly better than Chris Froome. He hasn't won as many as Chris Froome yet. His trajectory is already comfortably above. Chris Froome was, like, never challenging for sprint stages at the beginning of the tour and pretending he wasn't a GC rider. Eddie Merckx, I'll do a whole episode on why I think Pogacar is more impressive than he is. But I'm excited. You should watch it.
How do you watch it?
Peacock, NBC, for like $7, you can watch the whole thing. Just pay for a month of Peacock and then cancel it. Okay. If you VPN to Central Europe, not Central Europe, but Continental Europe, not the UK, VPN to Continental Europe, you can probably watch it on Eurosport, would be my guess. But I just paid for Peacock. Probably the way to go. You should have a VPN, though. It's awesome. It's like a great way to just watch whatever you want all the time for free. But yeah, watch the tour. We have our Tour de France fantasy league that about 10 people joined. I think it's probably, you could try to join it. I don't know if it still works. I'll post it if people ask for it. I will throw out our current leaderboard. I'm not on it. I made some bad choices. I thought that Milan would be a better sprinter than, I should say last year, like 4 people participated and I won, and that was like a bad look. Because I started it and then no one did it and I won it. So good news. I'm not winning. I'm in 6th. First place is Carter. Second place is Dunny. Third place is Miles as of now. So I am kind of tanking, but that's okay. Still fun. It looks like some people have joined, so you can probably still get in. I am beating Kyson, throwing down the gauntlet. My goal now is to beat Kyson, not to win. I think I'm probably out of reach for the win, but Kyson, I'm going to beat you. That's my goal. So, outside of that, any other news stuff?
Not that I'm remembering right now. So, I think we can.
As always, if there's something we should be mentioning in the news, if your kid did a cool thing or if you did a cool thing, let us know. Nobody ever takes us up on that, so I'm going to assume you guys are fine.
Oh, yeah, and since we're switching over to non-bike stuff, just a reminder, ride frequently. Ride 4 or 5 times a week. That's going to get you 95% of the way there. So,
bingo, bingo, bongo. So, I want you to go first. You did not tell me.
No, you go first.
I go first? Yeah. I go first for my thing? Yeah. Okay. In the past, I have thought a lot about the topics I did and kind of, I don't know that I've ever loved my topics because I kind of felt like they were sort of just weird left field, kind of frivolous things.
And can I just say, let us know if you like this, because it seems like most of the times we do a podcast, like I'll get some people that'll give us some feedback or say something. And usually when we do these non-bike podcasts, like we get nothing.
And so, like, I don't know. Maybe people like it. Maybe people don't. We're open to your feedback.
I guess it's a bike podcast, so people come here to listen about bike stuff. And, you know, so maybe we're just wasting your time. But let us know if you like this and, you know, if we should continue this tradition throughout the years.
So, this is a thing I am both deeply interested in, and I will say at the outset, concerned about. Mine's a little bit of a bummer. I thought about different ways to take this. I have a lot of reasons that I care deeply about this right now, and I think it's something that is getting way less attention than it should be. And it's also very interesting. So, just as kind of a, you know, like, it's not, you know, do you know, like, the fear of chickens last year or something? Or something? What was it?
One time I did it about, like, when you don't like the sound of chewing loud. I did that one.
Different vibe I'm bringing. I think this is interesting. I'm going to start big. We're going to kind of talk about a big idea and then a concerning part, or an especially concerning part of that big idea. But I want to start here. We remember high school biology and evolution interesting stuff, right? Sometimes babies are born with weird random mutations, and those mutations happen to be helpful to their survival. And over time, the, you know, the baby that had that goes and has kids that have that, and whatever weird thing it is that they have, you know, like one day a giraffe was born with a slightly longer neck and it could get more leaves. And so it had, you know, giraffe babies with longer necks, and, you know, fast forward 50 million years or something, and all, you know, giraffes have long necks. Or the story that, the example that I was given in high school biology that I thought was interesting, of like it happening unbelievably fast in a span of about 50 years, there was a moth in England that was kind of a pale white color. And about 1% of these moths would be born with extra melanin, which would make them kind of a gray-black color. Didn't really advantage or disadvantage the moth, so it was kind of like 99 to 1. Most of them were kind of a light white, pale color. And then the Industrial Revolution happened, and all of England is coated in coal dust all the time. And this weird black moth, within 50 years, became 95% of the population, because that was an advantage to be the same color as the wall you're sitting on, right? Because all the buildings and all the walls are gray. Birds can't see you, but if the windows and walls and everything are, you know, gray and you're white, birds can see you, right? So that's how it was explained to me. But it usually happens not in 50 years, but in, you know, 100 million years. And one of the most interesting and fundamental evolutionary things that's ever happened, if you go back about 500 million, so half a billion years ago, 500 million years ago to the first vertebrates, one of the very first things we have that is a sign of higher life is called the dopamine response, or the dopamine response system. There's a lot of different ways to put it. And what happens is you have a creature who's trying to stay alive long enough to reproduce in a dangerous and sparse world where they have to look for nutrients and they have to look for mates and they have to do all this other stuff. And not just humans, and not just the ancestors of humans, but really the ancestors of all vertebrates, have some kind of a system that gives you a dopamine reward when you do a thing that's good for your survival, right? And we know dopamine, like I was eating a little bag of Oreos, right? Sugary, fatty little pucks of goodness, right? I was eating two or three Oreos. You get a little bit of a dopamine response from that. And I always understood dopamine as a chemical that makes you feel good, right? You say like exercise, you get like, you've talked about like you get dopamine when you exercise, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? And it's not just that it makes you feel good, it's that it makes you want to do the thing again. And over time, you go back 500 million years ago, you get vertebrates with this response, right? Over time, humans, like about 300,000 years ago, which is really fairly recent, human, anatomically modern humans show up, right? If you go back 300,000 years, take a human, put it in a morgue today, they're not going to be able to tell the difference, okay? Right? Like anatomically modern humans have been around for 300,000 years. Vertebrates have been around for 500 million years, right? This is old stuff. And then about 5,000 years ago, some jerk figured out that you can grow grain outside of your cave and that you don't have to go look for it all the time. And that if you feed a goat some of that grain and build a little fence around it, the goat will stick around and it'll have more goat babies that you can eat. And then his neighbors started doing that, and then more people started doing that, and then you had ancient Sumer, and then you had Rome, and then you're a hop, skip, and a jump from Julius Caesar to Little Caesars, and suddenly you can have a bacon-wrapped pizza delivered to your door financed in 4 interest-free payments through Klarna. So what happens when you take half a billion-year-old evolved psychological brain chemistry responses and you crash them into modern civilization in just 5,000 years? And really, since, you know, like industrialized civilization and processed food and all this other good stuff, really in 100 years, you basically have
too much dopamine.
Too much dopamine all the time. And we get something we call addiction. And addiction is a word that we use incorrectly, because you'll talk, you'd be like, oh my gosh, I'm so addicted to s'mores in the summer. You know, you hear stuff like that, that colloquial addiction means like, ooh, I'm addicted. I love it. Right.
Wait, who's ever said that?
I don't know. That was, I'm looking at my notes. I'm kind of, so this is funny. Usually my position in this podcast is to sit here and go, every now and again. And when I actually have to prepare stuff, you do kind of have to jump ahead in your notes and stuff, but you would agree that we use that word kind of like lightly, but what addiction really is.
Cause it, yeah, it's like, am I addicted to Cafe Rio?
No. Right. Addiction's a really interesting thing. And I didn't realize this. You can see addiction in a brain. right? Like if you have a neurologist or an addiction specialist and you like I think it's a PET scan you can look at, it's not as obvious as like a broken arm that I could look at an x-ray and say, you have a broken arm, right? You can look at a normal brain and an addicted brain and there are physical things you can see with your eyes, right? And like I said, in 100,000th of the time that it took for this thing to evolve, we went from like nuts and berries to brownie milkshakes. And some guy figured out that if you, you know, light this bush over here on fire, you light this poppy bush on fire and you breathe it in, that, you know, you get opium. And then suddenly we have heroin and milkshakes and, you know, like nicotine and alcohol and caffeine and sugar. And we've basically crystallized all of these things down to their purest, most dopamine releasing form, right? Because again, the fundamental function is like with that Oreo, right? Like you get a crazy dopamine response from that because my brain is, you know, at least 300,000 years old, like a modern human brain, really like a mammal brain, 100 million years old, right? That like you're eating again, like nuts and berries in a tree or chasing a deer around. And so when you get like an Oreo, this little puck of sugar and oil that has a ridiculous number of calories in it, right? That like calories keep me alive long enough to reproduce. So I get a crazy dopamine response from that. And so this dopamine response system that you kick into gear, like with all these things that we have access to. And it's not just that, it's like behaviorally, there's like exercise and shopping and, you know, a million other things, even like, you know, like hoarding, like from the Hoarder show, self-harm, like there's a lot of behaviors and things that give you a dopamine response.
So there's a difference between a dopamine response and being addicted, right?
Yes. Because dopamine responses are fine, right? They keep you alive. All like my dog has dopamine responses, right? Fish probably have some kind of a dopamine response, right? But the problem is, as human beings, we have this like really ancient system in our brain that is crashing into Nutella, TikTok, and meth and stuff like that. And it's just like way, way, way bigger. You know, like the dope, I'm supposed to get a dopamine kick from eating a berry, right? And in like industrialized civilization, we have access to a lot of different substances and behaviors that take the dopamine system and send it into overdrive, right? And we're starting to, and it's good because we're starting to understand that addiction is more than just, ooh, I rich, gee whiz, I really like that thing, right? And that for a lot of like recent history, we've treated addiction like a self-control thing, you know? But I think like we're to a point where enough people have like had a loved one struggle with addiction that you know that it's not just like, you know, like people sell their babies for meth, right? Like it's not like a, it's a really, really big, and like I said, you can see it in a brain on a scan. It's a really big thing. And there is some kind of a self-control, personal responsibility dimension to it, right? That we're going to talk about in just a sec. But addiction is a really fascinating, understudied, underappreciated thing that we're starting to come to understand. I also want to throw out with all of this, certain people are more prone to it than others, just to be addicted to stuff, right? Certain people have brains that are predisposed to addiction the same way that certain people have bodies that are predisposed to diabetes, right? There are physical things that happen inside the brain that affect it. And there's a particular kind of addiction that I don't think gets enough attention that is affecting young men in particular that scares me really bad. And that is gambling addiction. Gambling is really interesting. Most of our listeners are in Utah. A shocking number aren't. I do want to throw out. Most of our listeners are in Utah. I make fun of Utah a lot. I think Utah does a lot of really insane stuff. One thing Utah does very, very well is they do not tolerate gambling, which is great. I think gambling is really bad. I think gambling is a universally socially destructive thing that, you know, as with all bad things, there's a discussion to be had over how helpful it is to ban or criminalize it, but it's definitely not something that I think we should be encouraging. And a lot of states have lotteries to fund their schools, which I think is insanely crazy. The statistically literate among you, which knowing the people that listen to this podcast is kind of everyone, I think understand intuitively that like gambling is dumb. It's not a smart thing to do. And I will say with all of this gambling, like the extent to which it disproportionately affects young, poor, and uneducated people is crazy. It's not good, but it's been around forever. Like a lot of societal ills, it's 5,000 years old, just like alcohol and, you know, like alcohol, gambling, all that other stuff has been around as long as civilization's been around and potentially longer, right? The first reason for that is it is extremely addictive. Gambling is more addictive than some heavy-hitting name-brand substances. Like, it is seriously, seriously addictive. You get dopamine responses from betting, from winning, and interestingly enough, from nearly winning, which is something we're going to go into in just a sec. And the second reason that it's been around forever is that it is extremely possible, like extremely profitable. There is a huge profit motive to be providing gambling services because you're guaranteed to win. Right. Like, and forever it was just kind of casinos and lotteries were the extent to which, and then like maybe illegal dogfighting rings and stuff. And depending on the flavor of gambling you're talking about, it looks different, but like placing bets on like a slot machine and like putting $20 into a slot machine, one person in 100,000 wins a bit of money. And the, you know, the people who are providing the slot machines win all of it. Right. So it's extremely addictive and extremely profitable, which means it's been prolific everywhere. And like I said, young, poor, and uneducated people are the ones who feed this system. And I'm going to focus mostly on the young aspect of it, because young people, and we know this, even with the kids we work with, do not have good risk assessment skills. Have you observed in your coaching, especially among young men,
yeah,
some concerning lack of risk assessment?
Absolutely.
This is a thing we see all the time. This is a thing I actually have a talk with my kids about at the beginning of the season. We have a whole talk where it's like, hey, being in a group with other young men makes you kind of vulnerable, and you might be in a situation where everybody but you is going to jump off the rock. And I want you to be able to not jump off the rock is a talk I have with my kids every year. And that same kind of lack of, I don't know if it's like brain development or society or what, but young men have a hard time assessing risk properly, which makes them golden geese to the gambling industry, right? Gambling was a problem, and then the internet came along and it became a huge problem. I have some really interesting numbers here. You were born, Dan, just before the 1980s. So I'm going to share with you for every decade how much Americans lost gambling. This is adjusted to inflation. So these are in today's dollars, okay? In 1980, Americans lost about $15 billion gambling. $15 billion, which is quite a bit. Skip to the year 1990, it's up to $35 billion, over doubled. Go to the year 2000, $53 billion. So this is the year 2000 to 2010. So one more time, 1980, $15 billion, $35 billion, $53 billion. Jump to the year 2010, $130 billion. Jump to today, $206 billion a year. Lost by Americans gambling.
Wow.
That's the amount lost, not the amount wagered. That's the amount lost by Americans gambling.
I wonder how much, like, because I know I've heard it's like almost impossible for casinos to lose money. I know there's some that have, but like,
I got that.
But online gambling, like, there's no overheads. You're not having to like offer people cheap steak dinners and
online slots. Dude, what a sweet business.
Yeah. Right. There's just like no overhead. You don't have to build a big hotel.
Nope. And more than anything, it's not location dependent. Cause it used to be back in your day, if you wanted to have a gambling problem, you kind of needed to live in a gambling city, right? Yeah. You needed to live in a big city where there was a casino, or you needed to just go to the gas station and buy scratch offs and do slots all the time. If you lived in Utah, you basically couldn't gamble. Like, I'm sure like illegal gambling has been in Utah forever, but it's just like not like most people aren't going to be participating in that. Cause again, it's location dependent. And then if it's illegal, like there's that extra kind of, you know, but then the internet comes around, right? And suddenly gambling was on a computer, and you could have a computer in your home, or you could go to the public library and use a computer to gamble there. We've all seen that, right? And I should also say, anytime something is illegal on the internet, there's a way to get it, right? Like, you can, it's hard to run like an illegal casino, because like that's a thing that draws attention that's probably going to get shut down, and you're going to spend a lot of your, you know, budget bribing cops to keep it running. Running illegal things online is not, I wouldn't say it's easy, but it's doable. Right? Like, people gamble in Utah online. It is illegal to gamble in the state of Utah. People gamble in Utah online, right? You can get a VPN, right? I pay like $6 a month for my VPN so I can watch Top Gear. Like, it's not hard to do. Not that I'm telling you that. Don't do that. I'm going to get into why in just a sec. But something really interesting happened in 2018. The Supreme Court came out with a very complicated ruling that basically made it so that states could individually legalize sports gambling, right? There was kind of a federal ban on it that got struck down, and that states can now legalize online gambling if they want to. Before that, it was kind of, you know, like only certain states could do it. It was kind of, you had to go to sketchy websites. The online gambling industry immediately dumped all the lobbying money into state legislatures for, you know, because we all know, like, name your state rep. Oops, you can't, right? Like, it's, you know, it's a huge problem. It's really easy to get stuff legalized at the state level. Very little electoral accountability for those guys. They usually run unopposed, right? All these states, not Utah, but most states, legalize sports gambling. Utah does not, but they find a clever loophole called daily fantasy sports. And this is not a thing for us because we're dorks, but you used to do like fantasy football in the office, or like we're doing like fantasy Tour de France here, where you pick your team and then somebody goes and tallies it up on paper and everyone puts in $10 to play and then the winner gets the pot at the end, right? It's basically that supercharged, right? Where you pay a certain amount of money to play, and then depending on how well your team performs, you get a certain amount of money back, right? So it's gambling with extra steps. But their lawyers very cleverly make a distinction, because daily fantasy sports are a game of skill, not a game of chance. And if it's a game of skill, legally, it's not gambling, which is a brilliant magic trick for stupid people. And then on top of that, like I said, like VPNs are a thing. Like you can access, it's technically a misdemeanor in the state of Utah. I don't think Sean Reyes's office is spending a whole lot of dollars chasing down individual people who are like gambling online. So you have your phone, and which you and I would both admit, like I'm somewhat addicted to my phone. I have a bad relationship with social media. I spend a lot of, and not like, oh, look, all my, because it's like, you know, an old people in school will tell you like, oh, social media is bad. Look, you see your friends on a vacation and you're not, and that makes you sad. And they don't understand that it's just like me scrolling through videos of people getting hit by trains and stuff. Like, it's way worse and darker than that, right? But I'm like addicted to my phone. And we know that the companies use algorithms and stuff to keep us like sucked into our phone all the time, because if your eyes are on the screen more, you see more ads, they can sell the ads for more. That's what basically all commerce is now, is just selling, you know, eyes on screens. And they take all of those really addicting things and then add them to just gambling, which in itself is addictive, before you add like the kind of phone aspect, and you get this unholy creation, and it's especially sports betting. And all of a sudden, all these young men who like basketball and baseball and football and stuff, and this is like a Europe problem too. It's like, not, this is not just an America problem. You have it in your pocket, and it's not like you're wagering $500. You're wagering $5 at a time on who's going to win the game tonight, right? You're creating a daily fantasy team. You are doing, they call them parlays, where it's, you know, if LeBron makes 4 3-pointers and they win by 10 points, you get $25,000. And so you're placing these ridiculously low probability bets, but it's a small amount of money, right? And all of these psychological things stack up, and it's the exact same cycle of addiction as a lot of the other stuff that our brains immediately go to, right? And I do want to say first off, before I go any farther, not first off, like 85th off, but I do want to say before I go any farther, not all addiction is the same. And I should say that like everyone listening to this has some kind of dopamine relationship with something, right? Like exercise. You know, exercise addiction is a real thing. It's relatively rare. It's more common among young endurance athletes, by the way. But like, you can have a diagnosed exercise addiction. But exercise in general is good for you, right? Caffeine. Most humans consume caffeine, right? A huge number of humans consume alcohol, nicotine. Like, there's all sorts of like drugs, because that's what they are. Like sugar, caffeine, nicotine, they're all drugs by every possible scientific definition, right? And then there's the hardcore drugs that you hear about in school all the time, you know, like heroin and meth and coke and other stuff, right? Like, there's a million different, and then like I said, shopping, gambling, there's a million things that are addictions. Not all addictions are the same. All addictions do kind of have the same fundamental like psychological background going on though, right? So I do want to say, I'm not going to compare. I don't think like heroin addiction and gambling addiction are not the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. And I should say too that like, if you're addicted to caffeine, it's probably fine. Like, a lot of people have withdrawal symptoms if they don't have coffee in the morning. You're fine, right? Like, it's not ideal. Ideally, in a perfect world, nobody would be addicted to anything. But I do want to say, this is a spectrum kind of thing. And I'm going to try to stay within my lane here. But I do want to say that like, you can compare a gambling addiction to a drug addiction. There's a lot of overlap. And I want to throw out You know, because some people say, okay, but what's, you know, so what, right? People are losing $5 here and there, you know, they're gambling. Yes. Gambling's stupid. If you have any education and you understand statistics at all, you know, it's like you're flushing money down a toilet. You should just watch the game and have a good time. Right. But like, what's the harm? So I'm going to tell you the harm. First off. And by the way, these sounded wrong to me. And so I double checked and I actually read the white paper and I looked at all of the sources that were reporting on it. These are well supported peer-reviewed statistics. This is not GPT statistics, okay? Like, these are real, okay? 48% of American men between 18 and 49, so half, have an account with at least one of the online sports books.
Oh, wow.
That's big. That doesn't necessarily mean they're using them all the time. They have an account with one. 26% of American men under 30 report, so these are people admitting it, it's at least this high, basically, right? 26%, a quarter of American men under 30 report that they regularly bet on sports. A quarter of men under 30 are regularly betting on sports. 10% of these young men meet the clinical threshold for gambling addiction, which means, and they have nine, it's like anything in the DSM-5, there's nine things. If you check four boxes, you have the diagnosis, right? That gambling severely affects their finances, relationship, or mental health. Hmm. Business Insider reports that since the legalization of online sports betting in 2018, bankruptcy filings among young men have increased by 28%, which translates to an additional 100,000 bankruptcies a year.
Is that a correlation or a causation there?
We don't know. Other stuff. So here's the thing. A pandemic did happen. People lost their jobs. They say that almost certainly plays into that number. It does not account for a 30% increase, especially because you did not see that increase in women in that age group, or just in other people in the population. This, again, this is a young men problem. It's not even like older men are doing this, because they're still using, like, older men are using traditional gambling, sports betting. And I should say, this affects women too. But the extent to which this skews a male problem is huge. We're talking like 5% of these people who are stuck into this are women. Mm-hmm. This is a male problem. The Center for Public Justice reports that 20% of adult men have been or are in debt due to sports betting. These all sound really high. I don't know what the methodologies are. You could probably quibble about the numbers. It's bad, right? Like, this, it's a question of how bad it is, but it's a really, really bad situation. And you can see the addiction cycle playing out, right? Because gambling's fun. It's social to an extent. A lot of people have the group chat. They follow the NBA really closely. They follow March Madness, the NFL, whatever it is, baseball, right? And that you start small. There's a social component to it. And in this way, it's similar to like alcohol addiction, right? It's a social thing that starts small that just spirals, right? And that, especially where there's a financial loss associated with it, people will lose money, then they'll go gamble to try to win the money back. And it's happening in small transactions. That's the key to all of it, right? Because nobody would go and, like, it's not like in the movies where some guy puts his mortgage on the table. Like, that doesn't happen, right? You lose your mortgage by doing $10 at a time. Right. Again and again throughout the day. And you'll get the notifications. There's actually a class action lawsuit, because, like, I was a gearhead for Backcountry. And part of my job was to call people after they ordered their derailleur and say, hey, were you able to get that installed correctly? Great. Well, if you have any questions, come to Backcountry. I'm your guy. Here's my number. Right. DraftKings and FanDuel do the same thing, where they assign individual concierges to people and they will send you personalized emails saying, hey, I see you're a fan of the Broncos. You got the game coming up. Click here. We'll give you a discount where you get a special rate on your next bet through, you know, like, they'll send you emails throughout the day. They'll ping your phone with notifications that one of your friends just placed a bet and that you can too. It's all the same things that TikTok and Instagram are using, but they're collecting, it's basically microtransactions, right? And so it becomes this cycle. It stops being social. It starts being bigger amounts of money. You need to do it more to get the same excitement, the same dopamine response, right? And so in reading all this, you kind of wonder, like, what do we do? And I should say, first off, don't do online sports bet, like, duh. And that's the easy response. But I do want to say there's a little more nuance to it than that. I will say, I'm going to spoil my solution here. Categorically, do not participate in online sports gambling. Do not participate in online gambling at all. And I'm going to tell you why I come down so hard on that. Because I will say, I don't think just saying don't ever do it, and that's the only message we ever give, is effective. I think first off, you need to explain why. Because to be totally honest with you, I went to school, like elementary school and middle school and high school, from what, 2005 to 2017, roughly, right? And I wish people had given me more of the, like, don't do drugs and here's why. So I kind of wanted to give you the why, but then I also want to tell you, like, the reality is that, like, we all participate in addictive behavior, right? Exercise addiction is a well-documented thing. You and I both kind of check some of the boxes for that, where, like, you are potentially doing exercise because you feel, like, bad about your relationship with food. You're doing exercise because you're stressed and it's like a stress reliever, which technically isn't, you know, which is like kind of a good reason to do it, but also kind of a bad reason to do it, that it's like a mental health crutch. For some people, exercise addiction comes at the expense of, like, spending time with their families. You know, like, you hear people, we've said before, like, you shouldn't ride on Christmas Day, right? That, like, or, you know, and not to say that categorically, but to just say, like, you should have birthday cake on your birthday, stuff like that, right? So, like, exercise addiction's a thing, but we're not telling kids not to exercise, right? And then you get, and there's actually a chart, I don't know how good it is, but it says, like, how addictive stuff is, right? And you kind of move down the chart here, and it's really interesting. I want to pull this one up. Like, at the bottom, they say, like, exercise and video games have similar rates of addiction, right? If my kids were playing video games, I'm not going to freak out. No, you do want to watch, because, like, 1% to 3% of kids who play video games will start to become pathologically addicted to it. And that's a problem, right? But it's also, like, becoming pathologically addicted to video games won't result in your death. Mm-hmm. You're going to waste some time. You're going to not have some relationships you should have had. But it's there's, like, a spectrum of how addictive it is and then how harmful it is. So exercise and you know, exercise, great for you. Like, it's, like, negative bad for you, right? And very, not super truly addictive. Like, video games, a little bit bad for you, not that addictive. And then you go down a little bit where you get to, like, caffeine and shopping are kind of, this is just one study, right? Caffeine and shopping kind of come next. Both of those, you know, like, shopping, you can, you know, like, a lot of people have credit card debt. That's not great, but it's not like a drug, right? Mm-hmm. Caffeine is one that is actually really significantly addictive, but, like, caffeine in and of itself is not that bad for you. It's, and most humans are drinking coffee every morning, right? And then you go down the list a little bit further, food. Food, cannabis is, you know, like, food and cannabis are kind of in there where it's like, you know, 10-ish% of people will have some amount
overeating can be very unhealthy.
Overeating is really bad for you, you know, like, and then you get down a little bit more. Gambling and alcohol are right on a similar level. And this is by, and it's hard too, because it's percentage of users who become addicted. A lot of the human population consumes alcohol, but here's where we can make a distinction, right? The majority of people who are consuming alcohol do so occasionally and very moderately. And so we can look on one hand and say, you know, a 53-year-old woman having a glass of red wine with her family on Sunday night while they're eating dinner is fine. It's also true that alcohol is bad for you. And we all know now, like, every 90s study about, alcohol is antioxidants. I'm like, so do bell peppers. And alcohol is poison, right? It's bad for you. But it's also true that the majority of people who consume alcohol do so safely. It's also true that alcohol is really seriously addictive. Like, this particular study said 8 to 15% of users will develop some form of an addiction. So you're talking there about something where over a tenth, it sounds like roughly over a tenth of the people who use it will become addicted, and it's really bad for you. And so that's one of those things where it's like, societally, it's just kind of ubiquitous, so we're okay with it. But you have to remember, like, it's a pretty serious thing, right?
Like, I think, like, if you haven't started it, there's no good reasons to start it.
Exactly. This is the gray area. And the point I was going to make is that, like, caffeine is fine.
Yeah.
Meth is not, right? Like, there's, like, if you find out, like, your kid is drinking coffee, you're like, and I should say, like, we're in Utah, I'm taking the religious dimension out of this. You're like,
we'll say Pepsi.
Pepsi, sure. Your kid's drinking a whole lot of Pepsi, right? Let's say Pepsi Zero. So it's not even the sugar, it's just the caffeine. You're like, okay, it's not good to be addicted to something, because when you can't have your caffeine in the morning, you're gonna feel like garbage, but, like, you're gonna kind of move on with your day. You find out your kid's doing meth, that's like the worst day of your life, right? Both of those are easy calls, right? Like, one's inbounds, one's out of bounds, right? It's things, and it's interesting, some of the other things that are in here, like gambling and alcohol are on the same level, where it's like, are there people who go to Vegas and throw 15 bucks in a blackjack table with their friends and that's fine? Yeah. That's probably fine. Are there people who consume alcohol socially and in moderation as adults? And I should say, the stats for children using alcohol are infinitely worse, and children should not touch alcohol ever. Of age adults, especially older adults, consuming alcohol in moderation from a medical standpoint is, like, not ideal, but it's, like, fine, right? Online sports gambling is on a similar level. And again, I'm not comparing them. They're not the same for a lot of reasons. Online sports gambling, this study put at similarly addictive to cocaine. And again, that's just going off percentage of users who develop an addiction. Cocaine is worse for you. Like, cocaine will like ruin your heart. Like, it's like a really serious hard drug. And I should say that like gambling is tricky, because it's not like you come home smelling like gambling and that you're chucking up a positive gambling test at work, right? Like, it's different than other like substance drugs, but it has really, I mean, you're talking about like an extra 100,000 bankruptcies a year potentially being attributed to gambling. Like, that's there's a huge human cost there. So I want to throw out that, like, in kind of like getting to the end of this, by the way, nicotine's even more addictive.
Is it?
Oh, yeah. Man. Nicotine's another one where it's like, you you do meth, it's going to really mess up your body the first time you do it. People who do meth for a year, like, die. Like, heroin kills people all the time, right? There's like the extremely harmful ones. Then there's somewhere it's like, a lot of people, and especially a lot of people who are like a little older than you, who like kind of grew up smoking and then quit later, like, and I should say, like, smoking's bad, but like, just like vaping nicotine is not good for you. It is definitely harmful for you, but it's not going to like kill you. Like, people aren't dying of nicotine overdoses, but it is extremely addictive. So a side point, we're talking about gambling here. Vaping nicotine, I was shocked by how addictive that is. It's up there. Like, it's above some hard drugs for how addictive it is. And I just want to throw out, it's an extremely addictive and annoying thing. It's like, it's an extremely addictive thing that would be annoying to be addicted to. And I'm not going to compare it to meth, because like, if you do meth, it's going to trash your body the first time you do it. Nicotine's not the same. All of these things, if you can, I'd avoid them. And there's some things where it's like, it's hard with alcohol and gambling are hard, right? Because, and especially alcohol, where it's like a lot of people drink alcohol and it's fine. And I definitely, and like, we did prohibition in this country and that didn't work at all. And so it's hard. Like, for, I will tell you, I have never consumed alcohol. I've decided that there's been enough addiction in my family and stuff where I'm just like, I don't want to open that door. It is true though, that if you're an adult, there's a way, but you should be careful. Like, and that's kind of another thing. Like, I think nobody who got addicted, no, there's never been an alcoholic who thought they were going to be one, mm-hmm. you know?
And the thing is too, along with alcohol too, is there's no performance enhancing qualities.
No, it's like there are some,
cause I was going to say, you know, some people that do it, that are good and they're healthy and fit. And it's more in spite of, not because of.
And I'll just say, like, it's the, for post NICA people, it's like a lot of, and I should say, there's a huge drinking culture in American universities, and not just even in American, just for people in that, like, you get out of high school. It's like, if you think there's a lot of drinking culture in high school, you get out of it. Like, I have some friends where like, that's all they do for fun. Right. Like, I have several friends who are like admitted alcoholics. And so it was really tricky in going through this, because I don't want to come out and just be like, categorically avoid every addictive thing. Because first off, like, I kind of have an addictive relationship with food. And I think potentially with exercise. And probably 80% of humans have some kind of addictive relationship with caffeine, you know? And so it's hard, because I don't, and especially where this is a youth podcast, I really struggled where I'm like, this is hugely important, but I also want to give you like the best information ever. And I possibly can. And it's just like, I'm honestly, and I don't want this to come off in like a puritanical way. My honest hope is that the effect of this podcast is that you don't drink or gamble, right? Because the more you understand about, and we're focused on gambling here, we'll use gambling.
There's a tiny reward.
Yep.
And a lot of risk, basically.
Right. And it's hard too, because it's also an individual thing, right? And I want to warn you, because most of the people listening to this are older high schoolers where you're getting ready to move on. And it's like, even if you go to BYU, like, you're going to be exposed to, and I'll use drinking as an example here, because drinking and gambling are kind of the two things. It's focused on gambling, but I want to kind of like, we touched on drinking. I want to kind of close the loop on that. That for those of you who are kind of older high school listening to this, it is a reality of almost everybody's post high school experience. And it's tricky because you don't see the consequences of it in the short term. And there's also just like you will have people that you know who drink excessively and are still functional, right? But then the flip side, there are plenty of people I know who are just not functional humans. And they're kind of getting, because I'm 26 now, they're maybe kind of getting to the age where that's changing. I have a whole group of friends where like, some of them drank excessively and did fine in school and others didn't. Like, I have two friends, I think, who dropped out of school because they just like were not functional. And I will tell you that like cycling's a European sport, you know, like you still see people drinking beers on like the podiums at cross races. Increasingly, pros are abstaining from alcohol. Right. And so I do want to make a very critical distinction that, again, like the, you know, like the adult, you know, the 40-year-old having wine a few times a month with dinner is fine, right? It's fine. I think that but it's just, it's so tricky with these other substances because you are not going to get a serious caffeine addiction. Like that's serious to the level of like, if you've known someone who's an alcoholic,
yeah, a caffeine addiction, you're not going to lose your job over a caffeine addiction.
Right. And that's, and this is why it's so, and we've actually kind of agonized with this like off mic too. Cause this, and I will say that like, I think the approach that was given to me in school was not super effective. And I can tell you that because a lot of people that I know had to experiment with it. My goal for you is kind of like, I'm like, I don't know what role this will take in your life, but I can tell you like, it's not good for you. And gambling and alcohol are the same, right? It's not good for you at all. But there are some social situations that you're going to be in. And especially, again, as an adult, where again, like if you and your buddies are passing through Vegas on your way to LA on a work trip and you want to throw $15 to blackjack table, that's fine. I will say, and this is, I kind of said this earlier, I think that, and this is a not a mature comparison, online sports gambling is kind of like meth to me. That's just, I'm like, don't even touch it. Like online sports gambling is so wildly addictive and understudied that it kind of feels like the people who are doing it are like the people who were being prescribed Oxy in the 90s. We're like, we just didn't have any idea how bad this was going to be and what the human cost of this was, right? And it's also true that if you look at even so like the top of the table was fentanyl, right? Fentanyl was the most addictive thing in the table. 50% of people who use fentanyl will become addicted. And there's two ways to look at that. If you really understand what that entails, that is a jaw-droppingly horrifying number, right? But then there's also, I can see a kid looking at that being like, well, it's a coin toss then. Because there are people, it is a true scientific fact that there are people who will do fentanyl and not become addicted to it. That is a true scientific fact. Are you going to touch fentanyl? No. It's kind of like during COVID where they're like, oh, it's a 2% death rate. I'm like, that's really, really, really bad. And again, this is, it's you kind of go back to that loop where it's like people who understand the math and who are scientifically in math. This is why school matters, by the way. Not that like, you're like, oh, what am I ever going to do this in the real world? Like here, right? Because hopefully you're scientifically and mathematically literate enough to look and say something that is that harmful, that has a 10% addiction rate is not a thing that you
should. That's not a good investment.
And so it's hard because I don't want the message of this to be, because, and it's hard too, where we're in Utah and there's like there's over half the population that just religiously doesn't drink alcohol. And I don't want people who aren't in that group to feel like the kind of lecture, you know, like it's like, so you're a bad person if you're doing it or whatever. But I also think that like, this is a science podcast where we're trying to help kids. And like, that's the science that, you know, like this is something that has potentially a real, and I should say too, it's one of those things too, where like not all people are equal. Like person A, B, and C do not all have a 10% chance of getting addicted. Person A has a 1% chance. Person B has a 30% chance. Person C has a 10% chance, yeah, right?
Your mileage will vary.
Your mileage may vary. So with all this stuff, and with gambling, my recommendation with gambling is, I think if you're in Utah and you do not have physical locations to gamble, because that's kind of a boomer thing, I think, that's going to go away. Like physical casinos, I think, are going to die with the boomers. I think if you're passing through Vegas and you want to, and you and your friend, like, whatever, it's wasted money. But the other thing is like, I don't know, you could also spend $30 and go to a movie and you're not getting that money back either. Eh. Online sports gambling is kind of on the meth fentanyl side of addiction for me. I'm like, I wouldn't touch it. And I would say too, another takeaway, and this is maybe kind of harsh, I would say for the girls, that would be a deal breaker for me. Like if you're dating someone and they are, and for the boys too, I think this will increase. And I've seen this discourse online, like people who have serious, and I should say, I want to be very careful, socially ostracizing people with addiction issues is not the way to solve addiction. And if there's someone in your life with, it's a hard balance to walk between supporting and loving the person and enabling the thing. But I would say if I'm trying to choose a partner, I would say somebody who has some of these addictions, that would be, I'm like, I don't want to invite that into my life. Especially where, you know, if you want to marry someone, like you get married, that's like it's like a legal thing. Mm-hmm. It's like a financial legal thing as much as like a love thing. So with all this takeaway, like, and I know this is kind of a bummer to do on this episode, but it's also relevant where I'm like, I'm working with boys who are the age, and like the research about, like, it's hard to study because they're not supposed to be doing it legally. I'm like, there are, and I've said there are kids at my school who do this. I've seen a 12-year-old do this before. That was a hard talk with the social worker. So I think my takeaway with this is understand the mechanics of addiction and then just kind of decide, like, what's my appetite for risk on this? And like I said, a 100% safe bet is don't touch it. And that is my prescription to you.
Okay.
Fair enough. I know that was a downer. This is important to me. I don't know. If you think this sucked and was awful.
So I'm okay being addicted to caffeine, Cafe Rio, and exercise. Right.
To a point. I don't know. Maybe you're not. There's some people who aren't. I don't know. I'm not going to tell you how to live your life. I'm going to tell you to be scientifically and statistically literate is my takeaway. And then make your own probably bad decisions anyway. With that in mind, wow. I hope your thing is uplifting
that
and positive.
That was heavy, Joe.
I put a lot. Here's the thing. I actually put.
Because like, Joe, the thing is, Joe never puts any time into this podcast.
No, I don't. The value I bring up. I produce this podcast. That's what I do.
He kind of shows up. And
Dan doesn't know how to use Audacity.
He just happens to know a lot about bike racers and can rattle off a bunch of European names easily. And yeah, he just, you know, yeah. It just comes kind of easy for him. So he did put a lot of work into this.
I know how to say Michael Venturinaut's last name.
Yeah.
And I know how to use Audacity.
Good for you.
That's what I do.
I used it last week. I couldn't figure out how to get the theme song on.
That's really funny because that's not hard. That's not a difficult thing to do.
I didn't have a lot of time. I'm like, I'd rather be imparting words of wisdom rather than figuring out how to play a theme song on this. So
there you go. I hope your thing's fun. I want to say one more time. I'm like questioning myself. It's important to me and I don't want... I don't know.
I don't know. It's kind of related, I guess, a little bit because should I just go into it?
Yeah, what's your thing?
So I don't think it's a coincidence that the outside diameter of our finger is about the same as the inside diameter of our nose.
I thought you were going somewhere else with that too.
And my topic today is actually boogers.
Gambling ruins lives. Boogers. This is the duality of Dan.
So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, boogers. So, boogers. You know what? Actually, are boogers. You know, I mean, we all have them.
Some people have more. I feel like I have more boogers than the average person. Well, I believe.
Kind of figure out why today.
Uh oh.
So.
Like I wasn't loved enough as a child, and now I'm really like I have a really runny nose all the time. Or.
Okay, well, yeah,
I hope Freud
of that,
comes up in this.
So your nose can produce about 1 to 2...
You say that like a Canadian.
How did I
your
say
nose,
that? Your nose.
Your nose can produce...
Can produce about 1 to 2 quarts of mucus per day. And
whoa, 1 to 2 quarts?
Quarts. Most of it you swallow.
Yum. How did we test this?
I don't know. There's like a mucus gauge that people... I don't know. There's people that do that.
Can you imagine being the PhD who put all the work in... And then like they're
these milk cartons that they they're filling up with mucus to
go for their cereal in the morning and then just, you know.
Oh, whoops, wrong quart.
That was the implication, but thanks for spelling out my joke. I appreciate it. For the dim-witted in the audience who didn't get it. You're welcome.
So when we breathe in a foreign object, the foreign object gets trapped in that mucus and then it dries up and forms a booger.
So like dust? This is preventing crud from getting in your lungs.
It's one of our most kind of crude parts of our immune system. You know, it's like it's a major first line defense.
It's like physically catching stuff.
Yeah.
And then it kind of becomes like a nucleus with like a milk, like I almost said.
Yeah, and it'll dry up, and then you know when you blow your nose, you're basically emptying the trash.
Kind
of thing. So they're actually really, really important for our health.
Okay.
And like one person kind of described it as flypaper for the flu, you know, like the mucus will catch these viruses. And then when we blow our nose,
it actually physically,
it's like,
said, yeah, that is kind of a crude, you know, it's the build a wall solution to.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And you're kind of like when you blow your nose, you're blowing the boogers out. You're emptying the trash.
Ooh, so that's what boogers do.
So yeah, that's what boogers do.
All right, guys. Well, if you have any questions, let us know. Let me give you a segue. Let me save you. What are boogers made of?
Well, they're made of dry. It's basically a dried mucus.
Okay.
That dries up around these, you know, the things that it traps. And then
I'm going to expose the fact that I was on my phone a lot in high school science. So I remember hearing about like mucus membranes, like mucus is in other place in your bodies. No. Is it like the same?
Yeah.
Mucus?
Yeah. We have mucus throughout the body. No, the interesting thing about mucus, and this is kind of a side note, is mucus can be different colors. And so if you have clear mucus, that's normal.
I've heard this, that like when you have a cold, you'll have like green or yellow mucus.
Yeah. And if you have like a virus, it kind of starts turning yellow. And if it's like a really hardcore bacteria, it can turn green. And what's changing the color of your mucus is like dead white blood cells, you know? And so, And so the more severe, like the more severely your body is fighting that infection, the greener the mucus becomes. So if you have like really, really green mucus, you should probably go see the doctor because you might have a bacterial infection.
Because so. I know that sometimes you have the thing where like, do I have a cold or do I not? That if you, or because I've had it before, I remember I had, I'd felt really crappy on the bike for a couple of days and then I noticed that my mucus was yellow. I'm like, oh, I must have like a bug or something. Like your body, yeah, basically, your body's fighting something.
It just shows that you're fighting something.
Interesting.
So. So it's estimated, and I don't know how honest people would be on this survey, but it's estimated that 90% of adults pick their nose regularly.
No, this is okay. This is interesting. Cause when you say nose picking, it happens on a spectrum too. I know this because of my profession. no, cause there's the thing where you've got like something in your nose. Like I'm doing it in front of you now. The thing I'm doing in front of you now is generally socially acceptable. Like I don't know that I do it in like a job interview, but what I'm doing is kind of like, you're almost like pinching the side of your nose to get something out of like the corner of your nose.
Like if something's kind of hanging out the corner of your nose, I'm going to be the first to grab it.
Or you'd almost have someone tell you that you got something on your nose there.
Yeah.
Right. Is that nose picking?
I think that's fine. Like I do that all the time. But I don't think I ever just stick my finger up my nose and start digging.
Not generally. I don't know. Because like sometimes you're like, I have physically something in my nose I need to remove.
But then I always just like take, like, I'll hurry and get a tissue and like shut one nostril and blow and get that out that way. I usually don't like just stick my finger up and.
But also you could be lying. That's the problem.
Yeah, and if I did, I wouldn't admit it.
Here's the thing. I actually think there's an important and useful distinction between nose picking and public nose picking. And I think there's probably a different amount of nose picking you're willing to do depending on if you're alone versus with your spouse versus in a job interview. Like, nobody's up to the second knuckle in a job interview, right?
Yeah. Driving, good thing I don't have like one of those cameras that film me all. My bosses would know, like...
Oh, like truckers have?
Yeah.
I wonder if there's just kind of like a...
I wonder if there's like an Instagram page for truckers picking their nose that you could just...
Probably is. And if there isn't, someone will start one within 20 minutes of this being released. But 90% of adults are picking their nose and 10% are lying, presumably. But I think there just depends like what counts as picking your nose, right? Because I did a thing in front of you there that I'm sure you could loop in.
Yeah, because I'm always kind of like
you do grabbing
stuff
right
off the edge and whatever. But that's gross too, I guess. So
this is a fun episode.
Have you heard of the term, let's see, I'm not sure if I'm going to pronounce this right, but mucophagy? Mucophagy.
That sounds like a startup at the point of the mountain that just received $1 billion and whose founder will be indicted in 24 months and disappear to Central America. So
mucophagy is the act of eating boogers.
That's upsetting. I think I would just love to be the person who, presumably the intelligent and successful person whose the series of choices they made in their life resulted in them being in a position to make the heads tails call on what we would scientifically use to denote eating your boogers.
Yeah. So
I wonder if their parents are proud.
Yeah. So that's the term. And I guess there's some people that kind of like, there's even a little debate going on. You know, there's some people that even theorize that eating boogers is healthy.
This sounds like a thing that would be popular in a certain big movement on the internet these days.
Yeah, the anti-vax movement or something.
Yeah, it's so instead I just ate my boogers because then it's...
Yeah, there's people that do argue that. And there's actually zero evidence that it's a healthy that there's any healthy benefits whatsoever. In fact, there's actually really big risks to eating your boogers.
Do you know what's crazy? Is it like a couple hundred years ago, we were like, developing antibiotics and new surgical techniques. And like right before you were born, we put a man on the moon and now we're like, no, the earth is round and you shouldn't eat your boogers. Like that's what like,
yeah, we're kind of going and backwards like, in some
we're like cutting their funding.
That's kind of sad. So yeah. So in case you've wondered or thought about it,
there's just no,
in fact, your boogers contain lots of viruses and pathogens, and that's exactly what
that's like the point.
That's
right?
What they're designed to do.
That's so, like having flypaper in your garage and then emptying it on your bed. Like, I don't. So I'm fascinated with this. With this, like the design of this study. Are they presumably there's a control group? That's easy. Find people who don't eat their boogers. Just look outside my classroom, and they're all over the place. And then the other group's the fascinating part to me, because are they finding people who are like, I eat my boogers and would love to have that documented, or are they finding people and instructing them to eat boogers?
I don't know how they did this study,
because it has to be one or the other.
They just haven't
right?
had any evidence that there's any benefit to eating boogers. And I'm sure there's,
what if you have to eat someone else's?
I
did the study cover that?
No, I don't.
It's fake science.
Yeah, so probably don't eat your boogers. They've got these really cool things called tissues, you know, just blow your boogers into that.
You guys said 3 years into this podcast we wouldn't have stuff to talk about. Now look how stupid you look.
And also just the act of sticking your finger up there is likely to cause an infection, especially if you damage the tissue inside your nose. So yeah, probably don't even pick your nose, you know, just use the tissues. But I will say one thing that I'm a big fan of is nasal rinses. Have you ever tried those?
Are we talking like a nasal rinse, like a neti pot?
It's like, yeah, something like that. It's like they basically have these, and I've seen them at like Costco or any, in like any Walgreens or something. You fill these little things with water,
hang on. There's
no, not
really
with water.
Quick,
yeah, it's really
quick. This is a great
distilled
way to
distilled water.
Okay, I was gonna say, we have to be with distilled or like sterile. This is a great way to introduce a pathogen to your brain.
This has to be very, very sterile.
Do not do this with tap water.
You have to buy distilled water to do this, and it has to be really, really sterile and clean.
Because it basically touches your brain while it goes through the thing, right?
And you basically squirt the water up one nostril, and it comes out the other nostril.
That sounds uncomfortable.
And it's like, at first you kind of feel like you're waterboarding yourself. And it kind of feels like you're drowning, and it reminds me of like taking swim lessons when I was a kid and stuff. And but
still can't get Dan to go to therapy, but carry on.
But it actually, like, I mean, a while ago I had a cough I just couldn't get rid of, and I did the nasal rinse, and it kind of got rid of the post drip cough and everything.
Huh.
Really, and like if you have allergies, it's really, really cool thing. Don't ever look for videos on YouTube of people using this. They're getting some really gross stuff out of their sinuses.
It's effective, I guess.
Yeah. But yeah. And don't use them if it's completely blocked. Make sure it's clean. But I'm actually, yeah.
Don't do drugs, kids. Instead.
So don't actually pick your nose. Just blow it. And don't eat your boogers. And there we go. That was my deep dive.
Okay. So here's our do's and don'ts from today's episode.
No online gambling. Probably don't drink. And don't pick your nose.
Don't pick your nose. No.
Unless it's like just low hanging fruit.
If it's right by the door, you can grab it. Don't step in. I don't know what tortured metaphor you want to use here. I don't really know how to close the loop on this.
Maybe we should stick with bikes.
We asked for your feedback earlier. I'm going to go ahead and retract that. Please don't offer us feedback. I get it. I understand. That is actually interesting. You are better at coming up with topics for this than I am. I'm going to say, like, I think people were probably relieved when my thing was over. I do think it's important. I stand by it. I stand by everything I said. No, and it is interesting because like the nose picking is an interesting sort of like metric that you can use to figure out where you're at with like a kid, because they're all kind of at different levels of, and the boy girl difference is wild. Like the social awareness.
The kids could just be anti-vaxxers though. You never know.
Hey, we're going to make so many people so happy with this episode. What should the secret word be? Mucophagy has to be it.
Yeah.
Mucophagy. And here's I want you to send it to us as you believe it is spelled. I don't want you to use spell check.
Mucophagy.
For all you Scrabble fiends out there, you got this next week's game unlocked. Mucophagy is the secret word. Don't
Don't become one.
Don't become. No. That would be a mucophagist. You're saying don't become the act of doing something, which doesn't make sense. Don't participate in mucophagy or online sports gambling. Those are our takeaways. What we're going to call this episode, I have no idea, but you're going to know
before
already.
We do.
You're going. Yeah.
Well, not really.
But. That's not how time works, but that's okay. In this universe, time moves forward. All right, everyone, I'm going to go ahead and put us out of our misery here and go hug my dog. All right. Bye, guys.